Live at Agile Australia, welcome to the Agile Revolution. I'm Renee, and with me I've got Craig today.
Hello.
And Lynn Cazale.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I feel very privileged to be in your presence.
Well, we've been talking, Agile Encore last year, and I was talking to you walking down the street.
Yes.
After sitting your course and saying, we should get you on a podcast sometime, and you guys do a podcast?
And then we go, yes, we've got three listeners.
Yeah, usual stuff. Anywho, anyway, it's great to see you.
Yeah.
You're coming to a stalwart here. This is what, your second or third?
My second Agile conference in Australia.
Australia,
presenting at it. And I think I lingered around one or two before that, and certainly hang around some Scrum gatherings and the Lean Agile Systems Thinking conference, the last conference, and some affiliated areas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us the Lynn story, because you're not an agilist.
No, I'm not. But I love the agile philosophy and the collaboration, communication, and the creative and innovative spirit that this community has, and they truly are a delight to hang around. So my background's communications. I spent years working with words, writing, playing an interpreter kind of role for many businesses, finding out what the community was thinking or wanting, and then interpreting that for the organisation, for the board and senior leaders and executive. And similarly, I then listened to what the heck executive and leaders were wanting to do and translate that for the community, who often would have no idea what the business was doing. And so I did that in health and education and art and sports, and about 15 years ago set up my own business in that area, communications consulting, and then I was training, speaking, facilitating. But particularly when I was training and facilitating, I loved the use of flip charts and being able to get your message across quickly, because that's the game, that's the race.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dan Rome says that in his book, The Back of the Napkin, that the race is on to be understood, and the first person that's understood is the winner. Mm. Yay!
I mean, that's your speciality at the end of the day. Is it visual facilitation? Is that what you'd call yourself?
Yeah, it's one of the things I do. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly the thing that plugs really well into the Agile community. So I've done work with a number of different Agile teams, helping them with their individual facilitation skills, so really boosting their capability to handle the that goes down in teams and groups, handling the stuff that happens in teams, and then a great way to boost buy-in and get people contributing and to play that race of getting to understanding is to use visuals. So I have no formal art training. I really think you can do this with some confidence and some competence. So that's one of the things I do is help people get their confidence around their communication back. And I think a big part of that is using some recognisable symbols and icons.
Because, the key to the Agile community is we like to put things on walls.
Mm.
We like to illustrate our concepts, which moves from that very waterfall or sequential process we've done in the past, which was like you came from, which is very much words, which
yes.
didn't really mean a lot or didn't
yes.
convey that meaning. But you said you kind of don't have any art training. So for those who haven't seen the kinds of things you do, we're talking about not stick figures, because you're very particular in class.
Yeah, anti-stick figure.
But it's using very simple, pictures of, people and, shapes.
Yes.
And like to tell a story.
Yeah.
So how'd you start experimenting with that? Because you come from that world with no art training. Did you just go into 100 different facilitation sessions and go, I'll try drawing a person like this? Or?
Well, I started with stationery. So I was using some big, thick markers from Edding or Redding. I think they were beautiful, purple, green, really bright, bold colours. And I would use them on very shiny paper, and so the contrast was awesome, and people would come up at the end of the session and say, this looks good. And then I think I was just having a sniff around one day and found this thing called graphic recording, where People stand in a conference and listen and usually capture on large charts on the wall what's being discussed. So that's
so this is like the RSA Animate sort of style?
Yeah, that sort of sketch video. So that's sped up, mm-hmm. but you can have real-time people in the room. So I did that for about 3 or 4 years and have trained many people in that graphic recording field.
Like we were sitting behind somebody in the conferences before who I'm sure went to one of your classes. Page went out.
Really?
Yeah, you know, the diagram started out. And I'm thinking, oh, there's a Lynn Cazaley graduate
yeah.
there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's my mission, you know. It's not for me to stand up and do beautiful artwork. It's to push this skill as far and wide as I can so that people understand each other quicker and particularly get through the complexity that we're often having to deal with, particularly in Agile and technology and the fields that we work in. You know, helping other people in the business understand what we do and how we do it and why we do it is that fires me up. I'm obsessed with that, helping people get that clarity.
So why do you think a visual message conveys or communicates better?
Better than
just words on a paper?
It's a balance, because I say I don't like people to go cold turkey on words. I still encourage people to use words, but to use the essence of the message. And you can usually tell when people are getting to their essence because they give a little pause before their message, or their voice goes louder or quicker or faster, or they slow down to emphasise stuff. So when I'm picking up that kind of message, they're the words I'll use. And then I anchor those words with a visual or an icon. So I don't like the game picture charades. It's not, hey, guess what I've drawn? That causes problems just as much as too many words causes problems. So I'm very much about keep using words, cut to the chase about what the keywords really are that you need,
mm-hmm.
and then anchor that with some visuals because your brain will process it quicker and be able to find it quicker. I did some work with some teams using visuals on story cards, and that's primarily about being able to find that story card on a wall swiftly. You're able to sort through mm-hmm. the who and what and where and why, and be able to locate it quickly in this sea of index cards.
And also, I mean, just by the sheer name, I mean, it was always about stories. It was always about, you know, the fable or the story we could tell about this thing, and visuals are very good at
And that's right. And in a session with Jim Benson yesterday in visual management, he's saying, you know, we think in stories and there's a very strong story arc running through our lives. So why not? You know, why not use those as well? There is that sense that, oh, it's very childish, or my kid uses those markers, or, yeah, my daughter draws like that.
Yeah, crayons for kids. Yeah.
And I don't use crayons and I don't use pastels. I use good, you know, good quality markers so that you're already starting with a good tool that will deliver a good result that's worth looking at and that delivers a clear, strong message. And if you can do that with confidence, you'll sell people in the room on your message. It's when there's hesitation and, oh, I'm drawing like a kid, or you put your own drawing or communication down, zip it, don't say anything, just get up there with some mojo and deliver that message that you've got, or capture the information from a room or facilitate the discussion. I think it's a really great leverage tool in that communication process.
So you presented last year on the girl with the chisel tip marker. Why chisel tip? What's so special about a chisel tip?
Well, the chisel tip is, I think there should be a ban on bullet tip markers because they're round on the top, bullet tips. If you have a look at a marker. And the Humble Sharpie is a bullet tip, but it's not too bad. It's okay. Fairly fine.
I like my Sharpie, but yeah, I wouldn't do it for the good stuff.
But a chisel tip has got three tips in it. So there's a high point of the chisel, which is just like a bullet. So I say straight away we've made the bullet tip redundant.
Mm-hmm.
There's the slope of the chisel tip, which can be really fat and wide and strong and have impact. And then there's the low point on the chisel, which if you hold it lightly against the page and get a nice faint line. So it's about having volume and being dynamic in your communication. I think the trouble with Sharpies is it's all in one volume. But a chisel tip gives you the option to sort of whisper some stuff, so maybe the visual is being whispered, or a key word or phrase is it's important, we're not going to leave it off, but it's not as loud and as important as this other stuff. So that a chisel tip gives you volume and gives you the ability to turn some messages up and turn some other things down. So yeah, the girl with the chisel tip marker was my presentation on that at Agile Australia.
And you're following it up this year with?
Well, I'm following it up with a session called The Girl Who Played with Paper. So it's a play on Stieg Larsson's trilogy of books, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So
they got another one to come.
I have, yeah. And there'll be a third one.
So what's the paper theme?
Because
most people listen to us after the fact.
Yes, that's right.
They can let the cat out of the bag.
So this is about, you can sketch a few things, that's good, but how might you bring that to bear in a group situation and now be the facilitator? So you can set up some templates, some models that you can get the group to populate. And the power of visual metaphors. We talk in metaphors all the time. We go on and on, like an endless piece of string, speaking in metaphors. So when you listen to the metaphors people use, there's some clues there about how they're thinking. And I really recommend using a cool, not a corny template, but a framework or a structure to capture people's content, ideas, planning, priorities, get people focused and get them buying into your topic or your message.
Will any of that information be available online after the talk?
Yes, my talk will be. I'll have. I'm using my iPad, so I have a couple of pre-prepared visual slides, and then I draw a lot of stuff live in the session, so that'll certainly be available on the Agile Australia website. And beyond.
And that's actually another point I did want to raise, is that a lot of the stuff I see you do, I mean, you do awesome stuff on paper, but what really astounds me is how you get a humble iPad mini, I think is what you use, as a template to kind of draw an A4 visualisation of a talk. I mean, what are the tools behind making an iPad a useful visualisation mechanism?
There's so many great apps out there. It really is about having a look at them and see which one you like to use. I've tried different styli, but I tend to use my finger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it connects me quicker and it's much easier to zoom. And that's a key, is you've got to be able to zoom.
Yeah, it's bullet tip, right?
It is bullet tip.
but it's got the chisel part because you've got your little...
Hey, you can also choose different nibs and it's a really creative place. So
What about app-wise? What do you recommend for that?
I use an app called Brushes, but there's Procreate and Sketches and Inkflow and Sketch Club. There are so many.
Maybe a little bit about, I mean, obviously it's your confidence in drawing, but then it's just your confidence being able to jump to like the different colours or nibs or things that you need.
Yeah, and you'll see if you look back, even have a look through my Flickr stream, there's very little I keep secret. I try and push most of my visuals out there, but you'll see I pick a colour theme. I like to say, don't vomit a rainbow. Don't say, look at all these colours I've got. But rather, here's black is a predominant colour. Go with the highest contrast, black on white.
Yep.
And then emphasise and highlight with some colour. Same on flip charts and whiteboards. You know, chuck the red and the green and the blue markers in the bin and go with black and then get some fluoro or other colours just for highlight. Yeah.
And two of the things, I guess, that we really can use, the stuff that you teach, I mean, you're talking about flip charts and the like, which if you're doing a facilitated presentation, which we do so much of, particularly in the early stages of an Agile journey, and in fact, even all the way through as we begin to visualise story cards, or talk about story cards and have those conversations. One of the things that I think might be Dan Rome I sort of heard him talk about is that it's about the taking people on the journey, is that the visualisation may not actually be understood very well by people after the fact. It's more if you've been there that you get that memory retention because you've been on the journey. Is that something that you subscribe to?
I think one of the priorities around working with visualisation is to pick the context. And what's the use for this after today? Does it need to stand alone, or can someone tell a story with it, or is it going to be videoed, or will it have some commentary? So I like to find out how's this going to be used after today, and if it has to stand alone, that is, it doesn't matter if you were there or not, then you're going to capture and arrange things a bit differently. But certainly to see the difference in people who were at an event versus those who weren't, the quickest way to bring someone up to speed is just take them on a walk past, a walk through, like a gallery. You know, first Renee said this happened, then she showed that, then Craig stepped in, he did this, this and this, and then this happened, and their overall message was blah, blah, blah. And now that person's been brought up to date with what that visual story is.
Yeah.
And they'll be, you know, that energy and interest about it will be transferred through the person who was doing that retelling.
Mm.
So that happens a lot with corporate groups. If I'm facilitating a team day, I'll always use visual facilitation tools to capture. And then people who aren't there at the event, they get the story passed on by those who are there on the day.
I always find when I facilitate, and usually I'm doing an awful lot of inception workshops, so something that requires a lot of different inputs from different people, so it's not just one person talking for the whole session, that I spend a lot of time looking at the visual cues of how people are listening versus not and where they're engaged, and even picking up on the risks that people are raising and so forth. So as a facilitator, I'm spending a lot of time thinking about what they're saying, interpreting, looking at the room and so forth. Do you generally recommend sort of like a dual role of someone who's a visual scribe and someone who's a facilitator in those sorts of circumstances, or?
That separation of tasks or roles does happen. So I have been a facilitator using a visual scribe.
Yep.
And I have been the visual scribe or the graphic recorder for another facilitator, which gets you to see lots of different facilitation styles. But more so now, I do both. It's a little bit like patting your head and rubbing your tummy.
She is patting her head and rubbing her tummy, by the way. This is a video.
But what happens is, if you make that visual front and center, it becomes one of your partners in facilitation. And if you don't know what to do, you can come back to where you're at with what have you already captured? And defer to the group. What do we want to do now? What's missing from this story? What would you like to add? Where should this go next? So instead of thinking, oh, I've got to manage everything, I love using the visual wall, the visual story as a really strong partner of mine while I'm facilitating, because I can relax in a way and just deal with what's happening in the group, because I know as a group, we're probably capturing everything, you know, the key progress points on the wall behind us.
Do you find sometimes with your back to people that you're not picking up on certain things though?
Look, I think that's one of those unwritten, it's not unwritten, it's a highly spoken law of facilitation. Never turn your back on the room. And I say, am I allowed to swear? Or you do edit out naughty
words.
I'll
beep it out. There you go. Everyone, no. There's a beep coming up.
No, I think that's a load of tripe, you know, that you can turn your back on the room, but you can do a bit of a dance in that you turn around and write some things and then flip back around and reconnect with the eye contact, and again you're using this marker as a bit of a baton, as an orchestra or a conductor uses, to keep the beat and the flow of this team going. And the visual is a tool. It's not like you're turning your back to, you know, have a swig out of your hip flask or something. You're turning your back because you're doing something powerful and valuable for the group, and in just a few seconds you'll be back around. To make sure I'm picking up what's happening in the room, I just pause, you know, I just slow down, make sure I've got eye contact, sprinkle my eye contact around what's going on, back to the chart. So it's also about allowing adequate time to do what the purpose of that session is.
Ooh, let's go on.
Like, we could do a whole other podcast on facilitation. I think often we try and we expect too much to happen
too quickly,
too soon.
Yeah.
And I'm a big one for spending time laying a foundation with a group. And if I invest more time up front, I'll actually get much more out of them once the wheels get turning. So most of the time when people don't see me at an Agile event or drawing pictures, I'm in a facilitator mode, working with teams and groups in some of the most beautiful companies in this country and other countries. And that's what I do, spend time at the front, invest time creating a great environment, using some good processes, getting my own stuff together so I'm going to be a good facilitator. And then all I have to do on the day is handle what happens.
It's I've got a friend who's been to your training course. So next training course is when?
July the 14th in Melbourne.
Melbourne, anyone after that?
I'll be in Berlin at the International Forum of Visual Practitioners.
Wow.
And then I'll be at Agile 2014 in Orlando. So,
awesome.
But there'll be more later in the year.
So they brought back with them this, you know, this sentiment that, you know, in order to get better at it, you've got to just keep practicing it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like any sort of art. You've got to keep doing it in order to get better. Which is why Craig would have commented on the people in front of him, because, you know, we talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of everyone else is giving it a go and sort of trying it in order to improve themselves. What I found interesting, though, is that the visuals that he was doing inside of Inception, he was spending quite a good amount of time preparing them prior to holding the workshop. Is that something that you generally recommend? People, you know, set things up in order to speed up the process inside of the room, or...?
I think there's a scale, there's a continuum. I'm happy to facilitate with nothing prepared, as in I've got my agenda, I know what the structure is, and I might have some notes written in the column or some rough illustrations of what I'm going to create. And then I think it can create some templates that the group's going to populate.
Right.
Versus here's an instructional flip chart with some training information that I have pre-prepared.
No, I think it was more placeholder, you know, where you have that conversation, sort of framing visually the element that you're about to talk about.
Yeah, which is that kind of what I'd call a template that you can pre-populate. However, you can crash and burn revealing too many templates, and there's a great assumption that the group is going to get to where you're planning for them. And that is also why I love to, I think once you know some basic templates, you've got them up your sleeve. You can run some different models, you can try some different things. I see there's a big assumption that I'm the facilitator and you're going to get to finish this today because I've pre-prepared it. And I'd much rather be there going, right, here's our plan, let's see how we go progressing towards that.
Yep.
And then I can
have slightly less, maybe less prepared diagrams that, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, how good your house looks or your pizza or whatever it is.
That's right. And I'd question, why do you think you need to pre-prepare? Is it a little bit of mojo missing, you know, a little bit of confidence around what you might be able to draw in the moment? Then I'd say, let's have a look at some of the things that you could draw in the moment and that you could have up your sleeve ready to sketch out.
So how do you feel about agendas being story walls and sort of going through an agenda sort of live as if it's a little team working through their tasks and their stories?
As in it's...
You've got a backlog doing, done, and sort of you pull the cards across as you get the agenda.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Never used it?
Seen particularly in workshops where there's a training element, I do. Here's what I want to cover today. Now the rest of the session is open. And so a bit of a lean coffee approach. You know, what do you want to cover?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get those up. Let's vote on them. Now let's do them. And facilitators will often talk about gather, sort, do. So let's gather what people want to do, sort it into a priority list, and then start doing them.
Right.
My other question is, so we talk a lot about facilitation live.
Mm.
And we're talking about how you sketch on the iPad. So one of the other things that quite often do in Agile teams, we are trying to get people to do things or get the value. And there is still value in recording the conversations or, you know, sometimes we do have to send that information elsewhere. Do you think there's value or are you seeing more people becoming, accepting visualization as a way of sharing information throughout the enterprise? Because it always used to have to be, if it's not in A4, double space type.
Yeah.
But now, can you rock up with one page with a couple of words on it and actually give that to an executive? Is that acceptable?
I think a lot of organisations are still stuck in the... somewhere between the two. I think I did a short sketch video about the pack, the PowerPoint slide, you know, between 3 and 25 slides of twaddle that people present as they're thinking. And I'd love to just spend a few minutes with them and distill what are the main things you want to do. Let's work out how you can deliver this in a more engaging way. So I think we're finally making the shift back to some human handmade skills. And so if you're able to sketch out your thinking, and you can still use Arial, 12 point, whatever you like, but try and keep the quantity down, because you're fighting for people's attention and this race to understanding is on. So if you haven't got much time, why give them 24 pages? If you can give them a brief overview, what I like to talk about, a big visual story, and then all the data and detail can sit behind that, all the spreadsheets are there, but you're not going to engage a lot of the business with your big pack and your spreadsheet. It's about having something that will do the engaging work. So I do a lot of work with teams, helping them distill their, what are the main things we want to share across the enterprise about this project or about Agile or about how we work. Now let's put it into a format that's digestible. So I've just finished a project with a team, and I'll talk about it in a lightning talk this afternoon on how they're using a metaphor to explain their project methodology. And it now lives on a big chart on their wall that I've drawn on my iPad, and we've exported it as, you know, to a huge JPEG file. And people walk into the project area and go, "What's that?" pointing over at the window, and they're drawn over to this illustration.
So for those who are listening who can't listen to the lightning talk, what's the metaphor?
Their metaphor is a racetrack.
Okay.
Not that it's fast, but that you choose your vehicle, and there are a number of gates, not traffic lights, like a waterfall metaphor. And then around this racetrack, there's some other illustrations I've done about governance, about some sort of philosophies of Agile, a toolbox, so some of the things that we're going to use while we're working in this way, and the choice that we have around our execution options. You know, can do a bit of this and a bit of that or a bit of that. And it's only been kind of live for a few weeks, but the feedback is, the hubbub is bustling around the business. Wow, we actually know what they're doing now.
Ah,
that's what it is. And people are much more interested, engaging, willing to talk about it, less resistant. And I think, you know, that's part of the mission I'm on, the race to understanding.
I've got a friend who's got a metaphor for Agile relating to The Block, the TV show.
Nice.
Interesting.
So you've got one book out already called Visual Mojo.
That's right.
So for those who are unconfident with their drawing skills, it's really just a number of really great visual images that can help relay messages that anyone can do, right?
Yes, it's a
book of images.
It's a workbook in your hand, so I actually want people to write in the book.
Yeah, it's got to be an image and then a space, to draw.
And the build up to that of giving you the skills around shapes and lines, which are really important, and your writing, and 60 icons and some meanings about how you can use one icon for so many different messages. You don't need thousands of icons.
Yeah, like light bulbs for ideas, right?
For innovation, for creativity, for collaboration, for engineering, for implementation. Exactly. So one icon has plenty of uses.
Yeah, I think one of the best exercises from sitting in your class is where you just said, draw a whole bunch of boxes here, and I'm just going to throw words at you, and you've got like 30 seconds to draw at
that. Yeah, that one, yeah.
And they start off nice and easy, and then they get rather hard, but I still look back at that workbook now, and I kind of...
I
can really remember what it was, even though it's my crazy drawing of a monkey or something. Yeah. It makes no sense.
that's wired up through, because it's been kinesthetic, you've done that, versus just reading the idea in a book. You've actually sketched it and it's there. Go ahead, use it again. Mm. It's there.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's on the horizon for you?
Well, another book coming out called Create Change. Mm-hmm. So it's about how you can use creative approaches to help transition and guide teams through change. And that's really focusing on capabilities like spontaneity. So I've got another part of my life where I've performed and love improvisation. So bringing some of those tools in. The book's also about experimentation, it's about co-creation, and also about being intrepid, being a risk taker.
Cool. Excellent. When will we see that on the
That'll be middle of July.
All right.
Middle of July.
Well, I'll have to look out for that and give it a plug when it hits the shelves.
Yeah, please do. Mm. Please do.
Or a free comment.
Certainly. I'll certainly send one through to you.
We'll certainly review it. All right. Well, it's been great catching up with you, Lynn. It's great to see you around the halls, and I think you're an example of where I often talk about the fact that people find each other along the journey, and you're a great example of someone who comes from a completely different area to what we do and has become, I guess, as I said, I personally sat your workshops, and they are, as much as I do a lot of facilitation, right, I learnt a lot from there, but you've come from another angle, and we found each other and went, yes, that's what we need, and that's what I love about this community, is we find people just from completely different walks of life.
Yeah, and that's why I love hanging around this community, because you're into collaboration, experimentation, all the things that underlie my values and interests. So I continue to hang around and love working with the businesses that are using Agile.
So if people want to find more about you, where do they go?
They can go to lynnkazaly.com, so it's Lynne, and Kazaly, Cazaly, which is the name of a famous Australian footballing great from last century, and he was my great-granddad's brother.
Great-great-uncle. There is a relationship there.
So the Up There Kazaly song.
If anyone's outside of Australia, type in Up There Kazaly, AFL, stupid, anyway.
Yeah. So lynnkazaly.com or Twitter, at lynnkazaly, and I've got some white papers and heaps of visual resources on my website. Love to connect with people.
And I think we were really honoured because you visualised our tour class.
I remember it was coming at me so fast. You had so much great content. I needed a rest after that session.
You visualisation. Well done. Great content for you, Lynn.
Thank you. Thanks for the chance at chatting.